Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ask John Call-In Day. This is an open question and answer session where you can call in and speak to me directly or simply listen live on the audio player on the webpage. If you've called in and have questions, press 1 to raise your hand. If you're listening on the audio player on the webpage, you'll see a box where you can type in questions. Feel free to enter your questions there as well. These sessions are all about you, and this is your opportunity to call in and speak to me live, and let me work with you to help you solve your weight loss problems forever. So if you've got something you want to talk about, please give us a call.
Cool. Welcome, everyone. So we're in week two. This is the question and answer session for week two. Earlier this week, we talked a lot about digestion, and we've got lots and lots of questions already in the chat roll from people. So we're going to get on to those right away. Nadia is here, and she'll be calling in and asking me the questions. So we'll get on to that. Also, if you want to talk to me, you have to call in. You have to press 1. It's very important to press 1. If you want to talk, more than happy to talk. Otherwise, there's lots and lots of questions here. You can also post your questions on the chat roll too. Cool. So let's bring Nadia in, and we'll get started.
Hi, John.
Nadia, are you there? Hey, Nadia, how you doing?
Yeah, can you hear me? I'm good, thanks.
Yes.
How are you?
Really good, thanks.
Great. Yes, you're right. We have lots of questions. So I'll
cool.
just dive right into them, if that's okay.
That is
the
more
first
than
question,
okay.
Great. The first question comes from Helene, and her question is, can you discuss the benefit krill oil versus fish oil with 980 milligrams of omega-3, 647 EPA and 253 DHA? Several recommendations have sent me back and forth, but none have your credibility with me, and I would appreciate your advice.
So krill, you know, I mean, technically krill is sort of like a fish, right? It's a crustacean, but it's a sea-dwelling creature that has omega-3s. So when you say fish oil, there's lots of different types of fish oils. And in a sense, I would put krill oil in the category of fish oil because you can get omega-3s from sardines. You can get them from salmon. You can get them from tuna. So there's lots of different fish that have omega-3s. Pretty much anything that's cold water is going to have omega-3s because the omega-3s are really great at protecting an animal, a sea-dwelling creature, from the cold and buffering the cold, and that's why there's so many omega-3s in them. So all different types of fish that are cold water are going to have omega-3s. The benefit of krill, there's a couple of benefits to krill as opposed to, say, a salmon or a tuna. Is that, and the first one is heavy metals. So the larger the fish is, the more heavy metals they're going to accumulate. They eat all the smaller fish and they accumulate the heavy metals. They typically don't dispel the heavy metals. So larger fish, as a general rule of thumb, have more heavy metals in them than smaller fish. And krill, as you know, are very small small animals. So they're going to have less heavy metals. And that's a huge, huge, huge benefit. The other is that krill oils tend to have more and better antioxidants. So it is a premium product. I do recommend it. It is more expensive, and that is true. But it does have a notch over general fish oil in general. However, you can also get fish oils that are screened for heavy metals, and you get fish oils from smaller fish like sardines. So if you can get krill oil and it's affordable for you, then that would be the best source. And I do want to just take a moment to emphasize how important omega-3s are. I have found just recently, you know, I went probably a year without taking any type of omega-3 supplements, and I started to kind of go off of chia seeds. I just lost the habit. I ran out. I stopped getting more. And I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I did feel a difference. I started to feel things like getting tired after I eat or not having as much energy, not feeling as fit. And I was really worried about that. And just recently, I started upping my doses. I started taking more omega-3s and really upping my doses and taking 5 and sometimes 10 or more grams of omega-3s. And I instantly felt a difference. Omega-3s make the body more sensitive to leptin and insulin, and that's what reverses the fat programs. That's what makes helps your body regain the ability to burn fat and stop having sugar cravings and speed up your metabolism and stop having junk food cravings in general. It just changes everything. It's not a one-stop shop, you know, one-size-fits-all type of thing, but we are all critically undernourished when it comes to omega-3s, so it's really, really crucial. But yeah, krill oil, really, really great product. Cool.
Great. Thank you so much, John. Pinky is, her question is about probiotics. She says, hi, yeah. I'm using probiotics, which says it's prebiotic and probiotics, lyophilized sachets, and they're sachets, and she's wondering if that's okay, and she's also wondering what is the difference between pre and probiotics.
Sure, yeah. So the prebiotic is the food for the probiotic. So remember, in the class where we talked about probiotics are friendly bacteria. They're actually living organisms. And, you know, if you get freaked out by that concept that you have living organisms in your body, here's a couple of fun facts for you. We have approximately something like 50 to 80 trillion cells in our body, and we've got 500 trillion bacteria in our body. So we have something like 5 to 10 times as much bacteria in our body as we have cells. So we're actually a host for bacteria. And the key is to getting the right type of bacteria. And that's what the probiotics are. But they need to eat. They need to survive. They need something. They eat mainly carbohydrate-based type of things. And they need the right type to survive. So in the capsule, they got to eat while they're sitting in the capsule. So what they've done is they've put food for the some type of sugar-based food, simple sugar or resistant starch in there to give them some food to keep them alive. And so that's to help them on their journey to getting into your intestines. So that's all that is. And in general, when you're eating prebiotics, you're eating foods that the bacteria like, the friendly bacteria like, and that they thrive on. And that's what the difference is between prebiotics and probiotics.
Great. Thank you. Sandy has a follow-up question to the omega-3 conversation, and she's just wondering, should we be taking omega-3 supplements forever?
Yeah. Yeah. Or get omega-3s in your diet forever. There was a time when we had we had as much omega-3s in our diet as we have omega-6s, which are some of the other plant-based essential fats. And that's a healthy balance, one-to-one. The ratio of one omega-3 to one omega-6 is a healthy balance. When that ratio gets out of balance, when there's more omega-6s to omega-3s, it becomes an inflammatory situation in your body. Your body doesn't cope well. The cells of your body lose their sensitivity to certain key regulating hormones like leptin and insulin, and it causes lots and lots of problems, including weight gain. Today, in our normal diet, if we're not thinking about it, we're having, some people say 50 omega-6 to 1 omega-3. I would say it's more like 100 omega-6 to omega-3, because if you really, really looked at our diet, if you weren't going out and trying to get omega-3s in your diet, you got to ask yourself, where are you going to get your omega-3s? because you can say, okay, there's omega-3s in fish, but most fish, you know, when you cook it or deep fry it, you know, we're eating fish, it's deep fried and cooked, the omega-3s are going to get destroyed. Most of us don't have things like chia seeds or hemp seeds or flax seeds unless we're thinking about it. And the other way to get omega-3s is large, large, large amounts of quantities of lettuce and salads. And we're not doing any of that. So we're really not getting any omega-3s. And that is caused depression, bipolar disease, all kinds of chronic issues and chronic inflammation and weight gain. And then we go to the doctor and we take a pill for the depression, which then also can cause us to gain weight. And we take a pill for the inflammation, and that can cause weight gain. And all these kinds of things, we're taking pills. And all we need to do is take omega-3s. And it's really interesting, too, because now I'm not a doctor, and I'm not offering medical advice. I've studied this stuff for probably close to 20 years at this point, at least 18 years. and I really keep up on this. And I don't necessarily always agree with doctors' recommendations. They don't make sense to me, but I'm not a doctor, and I wouldn't want you to listen to me over your doctor. But I've seen examples where, for example, somebody's taking warfarin, which is a blood thinner, because their blood's too thick, right? And they got a situation there. And then the doctor tells them not to take the omega-3s, not to mix the omega-3s with the warfarin, because it'll make their blood too thin. And, you know, omega-3s are great for the cardiovascular system because they're giving the body what it really, really wants. The warfarin is just masking symptoms and playing around with the body a little bit. It's not giving the body what it wants. So basically the doctor's saying, don't take the omega-3s, take the warfarin, and then don't take the omega-3s on top of that because it's going to make your blood too thin. And that to me seems so dysfunctional. Why not take the thing that your body really, really needs that will get your body back in balance, including thinning your blood naturally, as opposed to the drug? So in a society, in our culture, in our society, we're doing a lot of things wrong, in my opinion, when it comes to omega-3s. So yeah, you either have to figure out how to get omega-3s in your life or take them as a supplement, one or the other. But we are chronically starved. And like I said, you know, I thought, well, I just kind of went off them for like a year. And I did feel the difference, even though I wasn't able to pinpoint what's different. Why do I feel different? I realize now it was the omega-3s. Make sense?
Wonderful. It really goes to show how important they are in our body.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay,
cool. Let's
Kristen
take another question. I just want to say we have Jackie on the line that I'll take her call in a minute too. But go ahead.
Okay, sure. So Kristen has a question about veggie broth. She heard you talking about it, and she's just wondering if you could send the recipe for the veggie broth.
Well, let me describe the recipe first, and then we can get a recipe over to you. And coincidentally, as you said the word veggie broth, I was actually drinking veggie broth that second as you said that.
I knew
so
it.
So we're in the zone here. But it's not a huge coincidence either, Nadia, because I'm drinking veggie broth all the time because I really like it, and it's very nourishing and very satisfying and very hydrating and alkaline and cleansing. It's a huge, huge win-win. So the reason why I don't have a specific recipe for veggie broth is because I just go with what's there. But I use non-starchy green leafy vegetables, bok choy, kale, celery. I put some leeks in there. I'll put scallions. I'll put spinach. Or in Australia, what you would call silver beet, or in the U.S. Swiss chard, if that's around. I'll put some parsley or some kind of herbs in there, but I go with what's there. That's green leafy, non-starchy. So non-starchy, I'm gonna put potatoes in there. I'm gonna put sweet potatoes in there. They don't do well in a broth. They get all kind of make everything kind of mushy. I don't put tomatoes in there. I go for green leafy starchy. I'm sorry, non-starchy green leafy veggies. I just cut them all up. There's no quantity of this or that. I usually fill the pot up or to half to full. It doesn't matter too much, but somewhere between half to full, I'll fill the pot up with just cut up veggies. And I don't cut them up too carefully either. Sometimes I just break them with my hands and throw them in there. Not worried about that because really whatever comes out of it is going to work for me. So I fill it up with water. I boil it. I put Himalayan salt and cayenne pepper to taste. And that's really important. That's the most important ingredient in the sense that if you don't put enough of either, the veggie broth is going to taste too bland. You're not going to enjoy it. If you put too much, it's going to overwhelm it. But if you ever do put too much, you can dilute it with water once it's done. Anyway, I put a fair amount of Himalayan salt and cayenne pepper, and I would say do it to taste. I let it boil for an hour or two. I let it sit for an hour or two, and then I put it in mason jars. I have 1 liter mason jars. I usually get something like 10 to 15 of those in there. They go in the fridge, and then I drink it cold throughout the day. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm drinking it cold. I have about 3 liters right now in the fridge, and just pull it out, drink it cold. I don't have to warm it up or anything like that. It becomes a cooling, refreshing rejuvenating, energizing drink. Great to have in the mornings, too. For me, this is all I've been having all morning, as a matter of fact. So that's what I do, and that's why I don't have a recipe. There's no exact science to it. I don't want you to go there and go, oh, there's no leeks. I'm supposed to have 2 leeks. So it's going to ruin the recipe. This is not a souffle. You know, it's just a concept. You're getting it's really a way of treating your water. For example, like Nadia, I know you do things like you put lemons and cucumber and strawberries in your water to give it some texture and some substance and some flavor. It's kind of that concept, just taken a little bit further. It's not an exact science.
Right.
You can't do it wrong. and I would just invite you to experiment, really. Do you have any other thoughts on that, Nadia, that you'd like to add?
I love everything you said. There was an original suggestion that you used to give people about simmering the garlic and the onion on the bottom first and then adding the other vegetables. And I know that takes a little bit longer, but I still do it that way. I just like to release the flavor because garlic and onions have so much flavor in them. And so I do
That's a bonus. But I was going to say that's a real bonus if you want to do that. But for me, I just go for the simplicity because it literally takes me – just less than 5 minutes to fill the pot with veggies and water. So I like the convenience of that. But what Nadia is suggesting is we made a video originally, this is going back years ago, where I think with some butter or some ghee, we grilled up at the bottom of the pot. We sauteed some cut up veggies and garlic, and then we put everything else in there, the water and the veggies. That can add flavor. I find that if you put garlic and or scallions in there, they add a lot of flavor.
Yeah, they definitely do. And John, I just want to let you know that. Yeah. I just want to let you know that your audio cut out there for just a brief moment.
Okay. In general, it's good though.
Yeah, that was the first time it cut out for about 15 seconds.
15 seconds. Oh, okay.
Maybe
right,
not
well,
that long. Maybe about 6 or 7 seconds.
Okay. Well, what I was saying also, the one other thing I want to say is that if you're putting things like onions and garlic, you don't have to peel them. You know, you just cut them in half once and throw them in there. That's all you got to do. I would not put beets or carrots in there. They're going to be too sweet, and that's going to undermine your effort, the benefits of the juice. Cool.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. We'll come back in a minute. Let's take Jackie from New Zealand.
Perfect.
Hi, John.
Jackie, you there? Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Yep. I'm here. Hi. How are you?
Yeah, really good.
Can you hear me? Good.
I can hear you great.
Great. Excellent. I guess what I want to talk about today is a bit of an epiphany that I've been having over the last week since I've been listening, and it's amazing, and I want to share it with everyone at the moment.
Cool.
Maybe I'll give you a little bit of a background on my journey. I'm now 55. Probably from when I was about 18, I've had quite a stressful life, been a workaholic. My husband, when I was only 20, had a car accident, and I had to step up as the carer, the breadwinner, went on to have three children. And then kind of finally decided to leave him at 32. Then after that, had some sort of autoimmune going on, put on steroids, and my weight went massively from 50 kgs to about 95 kgs. Over that time.
Yeah, I hear you.
Back down to 82 now. And I've always struggled with it because I look at what I eat and I don't eat enough to be that weight. Never been into fast foods and things. So this for me is just amazing. It's really helpful. I remarried 5 years ago to a great man and I'm living mostly at rural Cook's Beach. We've got 22 acres down here. So listening to a lot of this all ties in to what I guess my new lifestyle is. Like, for example, we get raw milk from the farm next door, and I made my first raw milk yogurt last night, and it was great. So,
awesome.
Before Christmas, the last 18 months, I've suffered a lot of depression and anxiety and was suicidal a couple of times. So, and just prior to Christmas, was told I needed to stop work for 2 to 3 months, and which is why I'm probably listening now and taking the time to do it, and I just wish. I've joined up a couple of your programs in the past, and gave up because of my busyness, because I've always run my own business as well. And I guess I'd love to say to anyone out there, if you're saying that you don't have time, if you cannot end up like I did and make the time to do it, it would so be beneficial. So kind of with that summary, I guess what I'm finding at the moment is there's so much to learn and so many different connections of things that I'm almost finding it a full-time job to do it, like getting up in time to drink my water before I take my probiotics, before I take my coconut kefir, and it's I'm finding that a little bit difficult, but I guess that will calm down at some point. But my questions that I have, so we have access to raw milk, but the cows go off in a month's time. Does it keep as much goodness if I start collecting it and freezing it, or does the freezing process take away the good bacteria?
You're not wasting your time, because at the very least, you're eating something that's not inflammatory. So there's two benefits to the raw milk. One is the friendly bacteria. The other is that it's not that it doesn't have the inflammatory aspects of the pasteurized. So you're not wasting your time. Some of the bacteria will die. There's no question about it. But you're definitely not wasting your time. I think it's a great, great thing. And if I can, Jackie, I just want to speak to this feeling that you have of overwhelm, that you're there's a lot to do. And I want to say that I would prefer that you go at a really slow, easy pace. We've made the course over 5 weeks, but you don't have to do it over 5 weeks. You can take as long as you want. And really, I would rather you focus on one thing and make it a habit and have it really cemented, and then gently move on to the next thing, because that's the way to make it sustainable, rather than try to do everything perfect, try to take on everything, try to learn everything. It's great if you're in a position where you have a lot of passion for it and excitement about it, but it's not great if you're kind of just taking all that, you know, kind of type A drive that you have for your business and then focusing on this. That's going to work against you. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Definitely understand what you're saying, and that's a really good point. I guess the one thing that I'm focusing the main thing on is adding food, not dieting. I'm still having a bit of chocolate every day. I'm still having toast. I'm still having whatever I feel like, but I'm really adding. I've started doing some of this anyway, like with sauerkraut and things like that, so I'm just focusing on adding those things.
Well, let me just talk about that for a second, too, because I eat toast and chocolate also, but I do it in a way that's really healthy, and you can do this, too, if you want, and I find it tastes even better. So the chocolate, I'm either going to buy raw chocolate or I'm going to make raw chocolate, and making raw chocolate sounds kind of daunting, but it's actually really simple. All I do is I take coconut butter and raw cacao and a little bit of sweetener. There's going to be raw honey or a little bit of stevia, or a little bit of coconut palm sugar. I just melt it. It takes 5 minutes to melt, and then I put it in some sort of ice cube tray or mold or something like that. I put it in the freezer for another 10 minutes, and I've got raw chocolate. And raw chocolate, just like the difference between chocolate, just the difference between milk and raw milk, the difference between raw chocolate and store-bought chocolate from a health perspective is night and day. The cocoa butter, it's a healthy, stable, saturated fat, very, very fulfilling. The raw cacao is full of antioxidants that are also really good, as opposed to what you're buying in the store-bought version, which has refined sugar and the heat processing of the chocolate turns it into something similar to a pasteurization process where it gets molecularly altered. I can't even eat store-bought chocolate anymore, and that's not an effort. It's just that my body rejects it. I tried it once a couple of months ago, and I really, really couldn't eat it. But I can eat raw chocolate, so that's one. The other is with toast. What I'm finding is there's really cool paleo breads in Australia, by the way. If you go to the like either a health food store or Countdown New World, they all have a paleo bread that's made without grains, with things like eggs and almond flour and tapioca starch, and that works really, really, tastes great and works really great too. So whenever you can, whatever it is that you like, look to make it a healthier version, and then you're nourishing yourself instead of having something that's undermining your efforts. And also, and an important point on that is it's not less calories, okay? It's not less calories, in some cases not less carbs either. It's just going to have a different hormonal effect on your body. And when you look at everything that you've been through, from the traumatic experiences to the stress of having to run a family, to the steroids, and how that's affected your digestion and your body hormonally, that's what's caused the weight gain. As you say, it's not how much you eat. It's the hormonal situation that your body's in. So you want foods that they don't necessarily have less calories. You're not necessarily going to eat less of them. It's not about that, but it's going to benefit you from a hormonal perspective. And these are just two examples from the foods that you're eating right now where they can make a huge difference. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that makes great sense. So then I'm assuming fresh produce that we've got on our property, freezing that's also a good, keeping it for other times
of
the year.
Better. For sure. Yep. Yeah.
And I know you talk about coconut oil, but coconut itself, are you a fan of that?
Yeah, I am. On balance, it's really good. It's got really healthy fats. It's got a little bit of coconut sugar. It's not the worst sugar in the world, and it's got lots of fiber. So, yeah, I'm a big fan.
Right, because I kind of buy a coconut every couple of weeks, and we'll have that over the time. Then the next thing I was going to ask, in your blood sugar update that I listened to the other day, you talked about eating with 1.5 hours of waking to keep your blood sugar even. But then there was another thing where you talked about intermittent fasting. And like you said today, for example, drinking your green drink, your broth.
Yeah.
So they kind of conflict.
You're right. They do conflict. In one sense, they conflict. In another sense, I can tie that all together for you. What I would say is when you're in a situation where you're throughout the day struggling with sugar cravings, when you typically get sugar cravings an hour or an hour and a half after a meal, or you're tired an hour and a half after a meal, or in the afternoons you have sugar cravings, or in the evenings you have sugar cravings, then it's better to eat within an hour and a half of rising because it will keep your blood sugar stable. Now, there's a certain crossover point when that no longer happens. When your body becomes more efficient at burning fat, you do not get tired after you eat. And when you're eating healthier foods, you don't get tired after you eat, and you don't get low blood sugar episodes and sugar cravings in the afternoons and the evenings. When that happens, and here's the other end is an important part, is the end. When that happens and you're also not hungry in the morning, then on the days that you're not hungry in the morning, then you want to wait later and eat later. So it's sort of like an evolution. When I talk about intermittent fasting, I talk about what I call organic intermittent fasting, where you're just naturally not hungry in the morning and you're not getting sugar cravings in the afternoon. That's the time. Usually not in the beginning, and that's why I had that blood sugar one in this class, because many people are just starting out. Usually in the beginning, it works against you. You try to do intermittent fasting before you have reached that kind of milestone. When you do eat, you're going to tend to eat too much. You're going to feel hunger in the morning and get into a diet mentality and a deprivation mentality. And then when you do eat, your blood sugar is going to fluctuate too much, and you're going to spend the rest of the day trying to balance your blood sugar with sugar, eating sugar, getting tired, eating sugar, getting tired. And that works against you. So there's this kind of crossover point that happens. And when that happens, it's better to go later. Does that make sense?
Okay, that makes complete sense. Okay, so the veggie broth, you said you heat it up, but have you also said that heating the vegetables takes the digestive enzymes out of them?
Yeah, there's no digestive enzymes in this broth. This is just a version of water that I enjoy because it does have vitamins and minerals, and it is more alkaline. And it is more cleansing because of the vegetable quality of it. So, but it's not going to have any live enzymes on it, and that's okay. You don't have to have live enzymes on everything you have. But this is just a higher, more nutritious quality of water that I use to hydrate myself.
Okay, right. I'm trying to tie everything together, and it's not necessarily
absolutely.
Like that. Obviously, it's the old type A personality coming in. Sorry, one more question. Evening visualization, like I did them quite a bit about a year ago after listening to your thing about sleep apnea, and I did them for ages, quite a while. And now I find I fall asleep within about 3 minutes. Your voice must be very gentle. But do I subliminally get the benefits of that?
Yeah,
think?
You get. I think you get the benefits better, and I'll tell you why. Because if I make a suggestion when you're, you know, when you're listening to it and you're still awake, your body now wants to effortlessly let go of weight. There's going to be this conscious part of you that says, "No, it's not. I don't believe it. I don't." You know, there's going to be doubting. Whereas when you go asleep, it's just all getting absorbed, and they're all incredibly positive suggestions. So it works really, really well. And in fact, it's designed to help you fall asleep while it's going on. If you notice, my voice gets lower and lower throughout it because I want to kind of help you, assist you in getting sleep.
And I had to listen to it during the day recently so I could actually hear, and you did a lot of repetitive stuff as well.
That's intentional. That is absolutely intentional. The repetitive is because you're trying to create a thought pattern that becomes a habit. You know, thought patterns are things that can become habits too. If you were to watch your thoughts throughout the day, you would notice that somewhere in the 97% to 99% are repetitive thoughts. So I'm using that repetition to create a thought pattern that's a positive thought pattern, so that it becomes a repetitive thought pattern throughout the day. My body lets go of weight. I crave healthy foods. All those type of things can become a repetitive thought pattern.
Okay, now that makes sense as well. Okay, well, thank you so much, John. I just think that's so awesome. And I guess the thing I'm getting out of it is that I look for my life with food and vitamins as opposed to drugs, which I've probably been on for 20-odd years.
Yeah, awesome.
So
I do
thank
feel
you
that.
So much.
My pleasure, Jackie. And I just want to say that I do feel that, first of all, your questions were all great, great questions. But the type of focus that you do have when you dive into something, I think it's going to really benefit you to help you turn your life around. Just don't approach from a stress perspective, like it has to be a certain way. You have to get everything perfect. Don't do that. But the way you're accumulating knowledge and taking steps, it can really, really transform your body.
Yeah, funnily enough, I'm not actually doing that. Last year, I read a book on intuitive eating, and so I'm kind of tying it in with that as well. But this is probably the first time I've quietened my mind enough to listen to my body, and that's what I think is really awesome with the program. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, Jackie.
Bye.
Bye. Cool. Let's also talk to Kristen in Montana, please. So Kristen in Montana.
Hi, John.
Hi, Kristen. How are you?
Good, thanks. And Jackie, those were great questions. I really appreciated those.
Really great questions, Jackie.
They really were. I called for two things. One, I wanted to just check in briefly. I had called in last week, and I had basically, I'd say, generational food issues that, honestly, I was so overwhelmed by the fact that you gave it validity and encouraged me in it, because it's something I've never told anyone except my husband, because it feels silly.
It's very real. I got
to
just say,
stupid to say to people.
You know what? The studies are incontrovertible. For example, there is a difference whether your grandmother on your mother's side was in a famine versus your grandmother on your father's side. Or your great grandfather, like they can tell, like there is a difference statistically in what your weight's going to be like based on what your grandmother on one side of the family versus the other side of the family experience. It is so documented. And think about this for a second. You know, when you are, I don't know the statistic. When you're, you know, when you're a fetus in your mother's womb, you have developed all of your eggs already. So when you give birth, you were already, you know, that egg was already in your mother, physically, literally in your mother, and then it became your son, or daughter. So that the connection was once as tangible as it can possibly be.
That's amazing. Yeah. And truly, I was really overwhelmed. So I've been practicing it, and part of my hunch for the solution here is that I have three daughters, and that scares me because I don't want to pass that on to them. So just a comment on that was I've been practicing this. I've not felt like anything dramatic while I've done it, but with that said, I haven't been obsessively thinking about food, which is the first time that
That's fabulous.
Can even remember. So there was, you know, like overwhelming moments, but I did sit there thinking, you know, I can actually just eat and then go on my way. And when I'm hungry, I can eat again. And I don't have to think about it, which is, for me, is a huge first step.
I wouldn't even call it a first step, because to me, that's showing that it's happening. Because when you heal something, what typically happens is you kind of forget all about it, and then you go, oh, I don't have that thing anymore. You know, so that's typically what happens. And as far as passing it on to your daughters, if you heal yourself, you heal your lineage. And we do pass things on, you know.
And that's
so
what I'm hoping
the
for.
The things that your father says to you, his father said to him, his father said, we pass these things on. And what happens when you become, as you grow and develop yourself, you do your own personal growth and your healing process, heal your body, you heal your life, you heal emotional traumas. The next step typically is that you heal your lineage. I've talked to many people about that, and I've done a lot of work like that, where I've actually visualized white light going through all my lineage and healing the lineage. And that's something that's the greatest gift you can give your kids is to break the pattern right there, to heal the lineage. And you're doing it, which is awesome.
So along those lines, I'm gonna give you my whole question, which is like a whole bunch of mini questions. But along those lines, my mom is coming to visit this weekend. So I'm a little nervous, quite frankly. And with that leads me to the question. I have multiple parts. Like, I don't even know how this is gonna play out while she's here. But it extrapolates me into other situations where this isn't just related to me. This is related to eating this way. So my question then becomes, how do you handle parties or situations that are filled with foods that we should avoid? And I realize right now we're adding, but again, hopefully I don't crave cake someday, and I don't want that piece. And then the sub question there is, are you even tempted anymore? And do you ever just succumb to it? And if so, how does it actually make you feel? So there's my questions.
Yeah, I got all your questions, and I'm gonna answer them in reverse order. At this point, it's very, very rare that I am tempted to eat something that I feel, oh, I shouldn't eat that. But if I am, I do. I eat it. And usually what happens is, my stomach rejects it. As I mentioned, it happened a couple of months ago. I do eat raw chocolate quite frequently, and I was in an airport. And I had been traveling with my daughter for 48 hours, and you know how you're not getting enough sleep, and so you tend to want some kind of sweet or junk or something. And they didn't have any raw chocolate, obviously, in the airport. So I went for like the most gourmet chocolate I could find, but it was still a chocolate bar, but the higher quality one. And I ate it, and it tasted like wax, and it gave me an upset stomach. So I wasn't tempted again. Like, wasn't a time since then that I thought, oh, maybe I want some of that, you know? So, and that comes from adding. That does come from adding. The other thing, though, when you're in a situation where you're in right now, where you know there's foods that you wouldn't want to eat and you are tempted, and there's a dance that we all have to play, is I have been in that situation in the past, and I make sure that I'm really well nourished before I go into the party or the meal. I will eat before I go out. I will eat. I will make sure, you know, and you can have it with in form of spirulina and super greens and green juices and protein shakes, or have a meal with it, you know, a beautiful meal with a salad before you go, even before the meal. I know it's contrary to what I think, oh, you're going to spoil your appetite. Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, spoil your appetite.
That's what we want to do.
So that's what I would say, spoil your appetite. Before you go out, whatever the thing is, the best thing you do is spoil your appetite. Because then it's not as much as issue. But I would also visualize the situation working out really, really well. You have some time. Visualize you and your mom really connecting. You can even have this experience where this is just an example of what's coming to my mind, but whatever really kind of works for you. But what's coming to my mind is, you know, you're standing in front of your mom, and she's in a vision. You're visualizing this, and she's standing, you know, you guys are facing each other, and you're just radiating love and light from your heart into her, and it's healing her. She's being healed the same way you're being healed. This light is going into her and it's healing her, and she's smiling and she's getting tremendous benefit, and she's maybe radiating love back to you, or you're holding hands or facing each other, but you're healing her. And then you can also in a vision see the time that she's with you and the social gatherings and all that, just being magically beautiful and everybody getting along and nobody being triggered and you know, all those different things. And that's it. That's something you can do in any event that's happening in your life, because we're always going to have events that have, that you have mixed feelings about. So as a general rule, whatever's happening in your life, even that day, you can visualize it in the morning, everything working out really, really well.
Okay. Awesome.
Cool.
Thank you.
Keep up.
Can
keep
I
up
ask,
the great work.
Thank you. I have a question that's completely unrelated.
Yeah.
So, coffee. Where does it fit in?
Mm-hmm.
Like I enjoy
coffee. Coffee is.
I've tried
coffee
to get rid
is so
of
controversial.
Milk.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going. Yeah.
So I usually use like a I found it's like a coconut cream that is actually, it's coconut cream and almond milk that I really like, so I put that in it.
Yeah, I know,
but
that one. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's I don't know if it's worth even trying to eliminate or just wait or anyway.
Well, you know, there's yeah. So coffee is highly controversial. I mean, there are some people that claim that coffee is, you know, it's not only not bad, it's actually a superfood that you actually should eat, even if you don't like it. You know, there's the whole bulletproof diet where they drink coffee with with butter or with some sort of healthy fat in that, and that becomes like a healing type of thing in it. And there's studies where people that drink coffee, the more coffee they drink, the longer they live. And so there's all this kind of stuff around coffee. So coffee's having a big resurgence. But here's an important point about coffee. There's two points that I personally want to say about coffee, and I've noticed is that anytime I've ever worked with anyone that has done any kind of detoxification, because we do like a 5-day detox with people every 6 months. Nadia and I do that together. The number one detox pains, aches and pains and nausea and shooting pains down the legs and kidneys and lower back and headaches.
Coffee.
The number one type of people is coffee. And I say to myself, if coffee's so good, if anything is good for you, you shouldn't be experiencing detox symptoms when your body's eliminating it. Just doesn't make sense. So I have a huge red flag about that it's addictive and it's and there's a toxic element. It can't be denied. And then the other thing is it stimulates the adrenals, and that can be a good or bad thing. So the short answer to coffee is, if you're a coffee drinker, you want to drink it in the morning, not the afternoon. Because if you stimulate your adrenals in the afternoon and you have a cortisol reaction in the afternoon, it's going to change your cortisol rhythms and then potentially cause junk food cravings in the evening and cause your body to be more efficient at making fat in the evening. So you want to drink organic if you can, and you want to do it in the morning, not the afternoon.
Okay.
And not the evening. Does that make sense?
Yes, perfect. All right, thank you, John. I appreciate your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Okay, let's see. We have another caller here. It's Tony from Indiana. Let's take Tony. Tony, you there? Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Tony.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Oh, yay. I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan of your work for several years. I'm totally geeking out right
now
getting to talk to you. my question is, I watched Dr. Rosedale's video from last week, and he gave a formula about how much protein we should have in a day. It was like 1 gram per 1 kilogram of lean muscle mass. And if I'm doing the math right, which I have to do all the conversions because I'm not used to metric, but I should only have like 2 ounces of protein a day. And so I'm wondering if you agree with that.
That's another controversial topic, very controversial. And he was really the first person to talk about this, about how excess protein can be a problem. But no, I don't agree with it. I do take more protein. The only time I agree with it is if you're not having sugar cravings. Because if you're having sugar cravings, protein will satisfy that. And then, of course, if you're bodybuilding, you definitely want more protein too. But if you're not getting sugar cravings, and you're having mostly healthy fats and live foods and you're not eating a lot of kind of sugars and starches, then, in an ideal world, it's true. A smaller amount of protein is better. But it's only when you get to that place where you're not having sugar cravings. Because until then, You need the protein. The protein, if you notice sometimes when you're wanting something sweet or junk or something, and then you have, you know, chicken with a salad or some sort of healthy protein with salad, it just totally mm-hmm. changes your stabilizes your blood sugar. So that's the only caveat I would put on that one. It's sort of a yes and no. And yes, I definitely have more protein most days than what he recommends and have for years. And I lost my weight having more protein. So from a weight perspective, I don't think he's spot on. He's talking about kind of like there's a subtle point about having too much protein, but I think the benefits outweigh the cons in this case.
Okay. And one other question. I was wondering if you've heard of Bulletproof Coffee and if you are a fan of that.
I know you were just talking about coffee. Yeah, well, you know, in this conversation with coffee, I mentioned Bulletproof Coffee. I said there's someone. So, the Bulletproof Coffee is this huge movement where, you know, coffee is a superfood, and you have it with healthy fats throughout the day. I don't like the taste of coffee. I haven't drunk it since I was 16 years old. And the only reason I did then is because I was working in my father's office and everybody else was doing that. I was trying to be cool, you know. It just never, ever worked for me. So it's really easy for me to say I'm not a fan of coffee for that reason. But for everything that we just discussed a minute ago, coffee has pros and cons. But the Bulletproof style of coffee does make the most sense. Having that in the morning, a healthy fat with an organic coffee, there's good quality, there's good benefits, and then there's things that are not so good about it. But on balance, if you're going to drink coffee, that is the best scenario.
Great. Can I ask one more question?
Absolutely.
Sure. So when you were losing your weight, I mean, you didn't have the John Gabriel visualizations to listen to. So I'm just curious, what did you do since you didn't have that to listen to?
I had a really strong foundation in meditation. And I also had a lot of experience in visualization. So my father taught me visualization when I was 10 years old. So I used to get these really bad migraine headaches, and no aspirin, nothing could work. And he was a dentist, and he used to use visualization for pain control in his office. And so he kind of took me on this visualization journey together, and the headache went away, and I learned how to make the headache go away myself with visualization. And then when I was a teenager, I quit smoking using visualization, and I gave up sugar using visualization when I was an athlete. So I had this really strong foundation, and I did the exact visualizations that I made recordings of for you to listen to. I did them myself, but I did them in just from my own foundation of having a strong background of visualization. I would go to sleep every night, and I would have a exact image of how I wanted to look with stomach muscles and the thin waist, and it pretty much exactly the way my after picture turned out. And I would visualize my day, and I would visualize eating healthy, craving healthy salads and having a great workout and being successful in other areas. And I do that every night. And then in the morning, I do a meditation in which I would then visualize my day and reinforce the way I'd want to look and the weight melting off. And so everything that I've created since then are things that I actually did and were, without question, the most important things that I did in my weight loss journey.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. It was so good to talk to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great talking to you too, Tony. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Cool. So we have a couple of minutes left. Let's bring Nadia back in if we can, and we'll try to answer some of the questions in the chat room.
Hi, John.
Hey, Nadia.
Hi.
Hi.
So there is a question from Melissa, and she's wondering, can you define live food for her? Does that equate to raw or simply natural? She asked a question earlier about cooking or steaming vegetables versus raw, mainly for digestion and gut healing, as she's had a lot of gut issues.
Yeah. So raw and live, I would say, those are similar. So what they call raw, not always, but for the most part, that's live. It still has some sort of biological activity is going on inside the food, either with bacteria or enzymes, or the photosynthesis process is still activated. The food still has its life intact in some way. That's what I mean by live. And it is very, very similar to raw. And You should not eat all your food live anyway. You should just have more live food. Some veggies should be steamed and should be cooked. Cruciferous veggies, Brussels sprouts and cauliflower and broccoli, they should all be cooked. And it's good to mix that, you know, have a mix of cooked and raw. But the point is to get more raw, because then you have many more benefits. And especially, I would say, green leafy salads, they have an additional quality. They have captured sunlight in them. You know, the reason why a lettuce leaf is green is because it has chlorophyll in it, and chlorophyll is like the blood of a plant. Chlorophyll captures sunlight and then turns that sunlight into energy that we can eat, like carbohydrates and proteins and fats. And if that process didn't happen, the process of taking light from the sun, capturing it through photosynthesis, the chlorophyll and photosynthesis, and converting it into proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, there would be no food in this planet. Food is just at least the live food is one chemical equation away from sunlight. And really what we want is sunlight. We just don't have the system to take that sunlight like trees and plants do and convert it into energy. So the plants are helping us. But we do want that sunlight. And there apparently is a benefit to eating foods that have captured sunlight in it, such as a green leafy vegetable. It's going to have captured sunlight in the form of something called a biophoton. It's a photon of energy. And apparently that biophoton requires no digestion whatsoever, goes into the cell, interacts with the DNA in very positive ways, and tells the DNA to activate genes that express health versus things like inflammation. So there's tremendous benefit to the green leafy thing. That's why I say, you know, put everything on top of a big salad. And it's even beneficial to take your salad. And if you're out in the sun, put it out, expose it to sunlight for a little while, just a couple of minutes, and let it absorb more sunlight. It will literally absorb the sunlight because it's still alive. The chlorophyll is still there. The photosynthesis process is still possible. And so you're eating that captured sunlight and getting those biophotons, and that's a huge added benefit.
I love that idea of putting your salad out in the sun.
Yeah.
Great. And if you eat it out in the sun, then you're getting sunlight too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, John, there is another question. Two people are asking, both Jane and Carla are wondering about Dr. Rosedale mentioned that calcium supplements do not strengthen bones and that it can increase leptin resistance. I've been recommended by my doctor to take calcium plus vitamin D as I've lost bone density. What can I do or take instead to strengthen my bones? And do you agree with his recommendation?
I do. I do agree. Because calcium supplements taken, in an inert form, not in the form of a food like chia seeds or tahini or sesame seeds are very high in calcium or nori wraps, not in a biologically active form, that can end up being, your body doesn't know what to do with it, and it ends up causing calcium deposits in your joints, which causes inflammation, which causes leptin resistance. So I absolutely agree with it, but at the same time, I'm not a doctor. So I would always urge you to listen to your doctor, not me, when your doctor makes advice, gives you advice. So don't take my advice over your doctor, but you can choose your doctor. I mean, Dr. Rosedale's a doctor, too. So if you went to Dr. Rosedale, he wouldn't do that for you, obviously. And I'm not saying that you can necessarily go to Dr. Rosedale, but there are many, many doctors that practice something called functional medicine or integrative medicine or holistic medicine. Those are the terms, typically. Functional medicine, a doctor practices functional medicine, integrative medicine, or holistic medicine. And many of them are going to have the same opinions as Dr. Rosedale. And I believe that one of the best ways to strengthen bone density is to reduce stress in your life. And the stress can come from digestive stress or inflammatory stress, but it can also come from mental and emotional stress. Because when the stresses get reduced, your body has the ability to strengthen and heal itself. So if you're eating a lot of really healthy live foods and your inflammation levels are lower and your stress levels are lower, your body will do the things that it needs to do to make your bones stronger. This idea that that bones are strong because of calcium and you take calcium and somehow that calcium gets magically put into your bones, it's not the way, it's not real life. You know, it's what I think Ron Rosedale uses the term kindergarten science. Kindergarten science is like saying if you wanted to build a building, and so what you did was you just dumped a pile of bricks on a yard and just assumed that by doing that, you'd have a building. It doesn't work that way. The body, you have to consider the whole biological process. So the whole, so the real answer to bone density is the whole biological process, the whole mind-body biological process of reducing inflammation, reducing stress, adding foods that have the nutrients that your body needs, and then allowing the body to heal itself. The body cannot heal itself when it's in a state of stress. It can't heal itself when it's in chronic inflammation, chronic inflammatory state, because it will not produce the hormones and enzymes that heal, that are healing. It's more working toward the emergency state of being in a stressful state. So this whole approach that I'm recommending can, in and of itself, help with bone density more than taking any one specific thing. And if you are going to take more calcium, which may or may not be the right thing to do, coming from a place like chia seeds or sesame seeds or tahini, which is a form of, you know, sesame paste, or nori wraps, those are a better way to get calcium.
Perfect. Thank you so much, John.
Cool. Yeah. Let's take one more question.
Okay. This is a question. She could not attend the call because she lives in Europe, and I think it's the middle of the night there. She says, I trust the process with you, and she thanks you very much. And she's wondering, could you please help me with two issues? Not feeling satiated until I am overeating, and number two, huge evening cravings for everything and anything. I am currently listening mostly to the safety visualization.
Yeah, the biggest thing is, I would say, be patient. Because right now, whatever your issues are, whatever your fat trigger issues are, they have not been addressed yet. Your body's still in a place where it's wanting to put on weight, and those are some of the symptoms. The feeling like you have to keep eating and eating until you're stuffed, that goes away when the leptin resistance goes away. The sugar cravings at night, that goes away when the insulin resistance goes away. So they're both going to go away by doing the things that we recommend. It just hasn't happened yet for you, and it's going to take some time. So the biggest thing I can say is be patient. Write in next week. Let me know what's happening and keep me posted. And you'll see, because everything that you just described, I promise you, I have lived through that. My meals ended when I couldn't stuff any more food in me. At night, I had to eat some sort of starch and sugar and pizza type of stuff at night before I went to sleep. I have lived through this. It turns around. There's nothing, no one specific thing you have to do, but all the things that we recommend will turn that situation around. So just be a little bit patient, and we'll turn this around for you.
Thank you so much. There's people in the chat role that are chiming in saying that this is a huge issue for them as well. So thank you very much for addressing that.
Yeah, well, it's really, it's like if you're in a dark room and with a bunch of people and you're feeling an elephant, right? Somebody's going to feel the trunk and they're going to say, oh, it's like a snake. Another person's going to feel the ear and they say it's like a fan. Another person's going to feel the leg and they say it's like a tree trunk. It's the same elephant. And the same things that cause you to gain weight cause you to get into the situation. The leptin and the insulin resistance cause you to be in a situation where you're only satiated when you're stuffed. And when you're going to sleep at night, you're hungry. That's the same animal. And I've lived through it. And every word that comes out of my mouth, every thing that's in this five-week course is geared toward reversing the elephant that is causing the problem. It's getting the elephant out of the room and turning the lights on, really. It's addressing the things that are causing the problem. So I do understand that that's what you're experiencing. I have lived through it, and this is how you reverse it, by addressing the stresses and the inflammations, that are nourishing your body, healing digestion, and working through, which we're going to do next week, mental and emotional stress, because that's also causing the same kind of chemistry in your body. So doing all the things that are causing the chemistry in your body that are creating this situation, and then that will go away. You will not be as hungry. You will go longer without wanting food. You will not crave sweets as much, and you will not be hungry at night. It all goes away. So let's keep doing what we're doing. And as I mentioned before, don't focus on the weight so much. Don't focus on that it's 5 weeks. We're really, really trying to create healthy habits that will change your life forever. So when you look back a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you will know that this situation, this time and effort that you spent right now creating positive habits has changed your life and created a positive spiral and positive momentum that keeps going and going and going. You're just going to run with it. It's like the wind behind you on your sails. You're just going to keep moving and moving with it. So focus on that. Really nourish your body, really do things to heal digestion, and really do things to help reduce mental and emotional stress, which is what we're going to talk about next week. So cool. So have a great weekend, everybody. It's Friday here, so I say weekend, but it's almost Friday. It's almost weekend for everyone that's in the States. Have a great weekend, and we will have a class again Friday night in the States, Tuesday morning, Australia, New Zealand, to talk about what is also one of the most important things you can do is address mental trauma or emotional trauma, mental and emotional stress. When you do all that, it just changes your body in enormous ways. So cool. Thanks, everyone, and thanks, Tiffany and Nadia and Amir and everyone that's helping out, and we'll speak to you soon. Take care. Thanks for joining me on this Ask John call-in day. For any questions I was unable to get to in this call, I'll post my written responses in the forum for your reference. I appreciate you taking time to join me here, and I look forward to connecting again with you soon.